Hey there, everyone. Chris, Chimp195 here. This is episode 2 of Psyched to Be With You with Dr. Yemaya Halbrook. I really, really, really enjoyed this one. It was a great time. We had a really, really good laugh. I hope you enjoy it as well. Just to let you know that you can find all the important links and information wherever you found this in the description attached. That'll be links around how to keep up with the show, how to support, as well as all of Dr. Yemaya's recommendations and her website and her itch.io, where you can find games made by her. Just a quick couple of notes for you at the top. I referenced the intro to the sort of stream, which involves this piece of music you're listening to now. I also mentioned a few sort of streaming things about alerts and chat. The majority of these episodes are streamed and recorded live, which is the audio that you hear. So if you are able to sort of keep up and can check out the stream one day, that's great. You can import into the show as well. That would be, you know, awesome. We'd really appreciate it. But yeah, psyched to be with you. Episode 2 with Dr. Yemaya Halbrook. Here's the episode. I hope you enjoy it. Hello, everyone. That intro's still new. It's still makes me laugh that I think I'm that funny. So I hope you guys enjoyed that as well, and that community-made tune. For those that are new to the show or haven't met me, hi, my name's Chris, or Chim195. This is the show Blind Psyche, because I'm legally blind and do some psychology stuff, as we're going to discuss shortly. The format is a little bit different today. As you can see, it's a talk show with a very special guest. This is, believe it or not, back by unpopular demand, episode 2 of Psyched to Be With You. The key things to just sort of note are the alerts are muted. They're sort of going to be up in there quietly in the corner. I'll be keeping an eye on chat, but it's mostly just going to be chatting to my, again, very special guest. You can do !guest in the chat. Find a link to their website. So, I am tremendously excited to be here. Well, what else is there to say but pass it over to you, my very special guest. Would you please tell us all who you are, what you do, and where you go when you are or not around?
Not sure that last question, but my name is Dr. Yemaya Halbrook, which it still feels very weird to call myself a doctor. It's been 2 years since I did my Viva, but I didn't get a physical graduation ceremony, so I feel like I never got to become a doctor. But anyways, that's who I am. I research generally the positive effects of video games. I started my PhD in 2016. I handed in my thesis after 3 years, so I did my PhD in 3 years. Whoop, whoop. I originally actually was going to study like online behavioral therapy and how that can be a good intervention for well-being, but then Pokemon Go came out the summer right before I started my PhD, and I was like, huh, okay, this is interesting. I was reading a whole bunch of people saying how much, you know, Pokemon Go was helping with their like depression and anxiety and whatnot, but I couldn't really find any proper academic research on it, like with the AR and all that kind of stuff. So I was like, okay, this is what I'm going to do my PhD on. So with that, my PhD, it won an award from the APA Division 46 for outstanding thesis. Woo, it's like the fanciest thing on my CV. I know, it's like what I highlight whenever I'm in an interview. I'm like, by the way, do you see my PhD work is fancy? Hire me. But from that, I have a published review in Perspectives on Psychological Science. It has now been cited like 47 times in less than 2 years. Yeah, I'm just going to talk about how impressive I am right now. I hope that's okay. I
mean, that's why we're here.
Just to focus on my fanciness, I guess. But suppose we can do that. Since then, I have done a few like part-time lectureships at Mary Immaculate College here in Limerick. I've also done I recently finished up a 6-month postdoc with Dublin City University, researching colorectal cancer. So that was a fun 6 months doing nothing but reading about colorectal cancer. Has nothing to do with my research, but it was a postdoc and it was a well-paying job. So it's what I did. I'm currently in between jobs, so right now I'm doing some of my own research, really. Like, if anybody looks at my website, I've been writing my own blog articles where I actually have surveyed people in different communities, depending on what game I'm studying, and getting their feedback. And the reason I like doing that is because for anybody who here is watching as an academic, you know that the academic publication process can take, honestly, years, like literal years. I've been trying to get a paper published for my PhD for 2.5 years now. It sat with a journal for 6 months unread. They hadn't even sent it to reviewers. And that just absolutely blows
my
mind.
For non-academic viewers, let me put that in perspective a little bit. Imagine like going through a whole game, which is the production of your own paper, then thinking you've beat the final boss, which is the first reviewer, and then out of nowhere another boss appears, and that's reviewer two, and they're usually horrible and have really cheesy gimmicks that just wreck you in one shot. That's what trying to produce a paper is like.
Yeah, or going like up to the temple that you're supposed to be, and there's somebody at the door that's like, oh, you know what? All of this research has been done before. Go see this person. I'm like, you obviously didn't read my article because I say nothing along the lines of that person, but cool. But so recently I've written a couple of articles on the psychology of different games. So I did the psychology of some farming simulators. So anybody who plays like Stardew Valley, Story of Seasons, Harvest Moon, those types of games, I asked them if the game helps with like their anxiety and whatnot. And if so, how come? And there was actually quite a few different answers. It was really intriguing. Some things I didn't think about, like I guess it helps with ADHD. Not something that I would have thought about, but in general, like the relaxing music, all that kind of stuff helps really like calm people. And I was able to ask these people and then post the article a couple weeks later. I didn't need to go through, you know, the university ethics committee and wait 3 months for that to get approved, then survey the people, then write a paper, then wait 2 years to get it published. I was able to just be like, this is what people think about farming simulators. Now, I'm not saying that's always the best practice, obviously, like I'm still working on academic stuff as well, but it's just, it's been nice to get some things out there without having to go through that whole rigmarole of the publication process, you know. I don't know if that answered your question. I'd like, I talk in circles a lot, and then sometimes I avoid what question was actually even asked, so I don't know if I answered your question.
Who you are, what you do, and where you go when you're not around, so you've kind of, you kind of give us a nice even spread there. It's quite nice. I think like that's a, you know, I mean, we could have an entire, you know, year long debate around the whole issues with academia and publication and the metric driven, easily manipulated, if you know anything about AI, kind of a number of downloads and, you know, research gate views and stuff. So I think, you know, you kind of maybe, and not to suggest myself as a radical, but maybe you've got to go a bit rogue sometimes to, especially when, as we know, and, you know, I'm saying this, I don't know, Zeitgeist is in the chat, so I could just self-referencing here. But, like, you know, because there's such a moral panic of, like, you know, oh, gosh, everything video games is evil and that type of thing. I remember...
Like, China, they just put on that ban for, like, the one-hour playtime. Like, come on.
I mean, depending on what game you play, there's, I mean, an hour will not get you very far.
No.
Like, no, I mean, that, let's just first, you know, get that in there, and then let alone the other negative effects. I mean, interestingly, what is your opinion on farming simulators yourself? How do you find those?
Dog stream bomb.
Dogs,
this is my
yes,
dog.
Yes, the view account just shot.
Just because there's a dog, but that's usually how it works. Yeah, but. What was the question?
You know, you mentioned like farming simulators, for example. Like, what's your opinion on those games?
Like, what do I love them. Stardew Valley is one of my absolute favorite games of all time. So Stardew Valley, it's my favorite, and I think it's probably one of the best farming simulators. So I would always feel guilty buying a different farming simulator because I'm like, I have one that's better. I should go play that. But recently I've realized that, no, it's okay to go spend €20 on this game, play it for a while, and then go back to Stardew Valley because it is better.
For international listeners, Euro is another currency that isn't a dollar or a pound.
Yes, it is. which is funny because I know you guys can probably all tell that my accent is American, but I actually live in Ireland, who's the Euro. So. And now I lost my screen is off. Oh, but what people have said in the survey actually resonated very much with me as well. It's really nice to have some very clear-cut, obtainable goals, especially with this last, God, is it over 18 months now that we've all been dealing with, like, lockdowns and everything? What even is time? It's September, isn't it?
I mean, time is literally a man-made, you know, thing that we designed for trains, so... you know.
Just for trains, nothing else, just for trains.
I mean, that's literally the origin of time as we know it. Like, it was like, so you could leave a train in, like, say, London at this time and not arrive in Liverpool before you'd left. That's where the invention of, like, the clock, like. Sorry, fun fact.
Oh, I like it. No, I didn't know that. But it's, and this is a lot of what my research is about, the self-determination theory. It's a very specific social psychology theory, and just as a very basic overview, it states that we need to satisfy three basic psychological needs for happiness. So there's autonomy, competence, and relatedness. Now, these are often studied in terms of like real life, but they can actually be satisfied in video games as well, which is part of what I research. So autonomy is when you feel like you have control over everything. So games like Breath of the Wild would be a perfect example here. You can choose any order. You can do every divine beast. You can do whichever order that you want. You can do none of them and just go straight to Ganon with three hearts and a stick. Some people have done that. How? I have absolutely no idea. But because you have that control over those decisions, you feel very autonomous, which then will help, you know, lead and predict well-being for going into my statistical mumbo jumbo. And then competence is exactly what it sounds. It's you feel like you're competent at something. So in video games, it would be, you know, levels getting more difficult, but you're getting the upgrades. You feel like you're meeting new challenges. You're not just doing the same thing over and over again. Or even if you are doing the same thing, there's increased difficulty. So like the you know, enemies have more health, or there's more of them, but you got this upgrade and now you can shoot two arrows at once or something like that. So that would be the competence. And then the last one is relatedness, and that has to do with both your connection with other people that you play, as well as the non-player characters in games, which NPCs are very, very important in games like Stardew Valley, because that's a huge aspect of it. You know, you want to befriend the villagers. A core aspect of a lot of farming simulators is to eventually like marry them and have kids and want to. So that's where the relatedness comes in. And that's what a lot of people, without those actual words, talked about in the survey. They like that they were able to choose whatever they wanted to do. If they want to focus, you know, this season just on growing their crops so they can have money for the next season, cool. Then the next month they would go and, you know, talk to all the villagers and everything. And then the month after that, they're like, okay, I'm gonna upgrade all my tools. So there's not really any high stakes. Like, you're not gonna lose anything if you decide to put off doing something until the next year. Like, I hardly ever talk to the villagers at first. I want to go make my farm pretty and get some money and, you know, get all of the farm animals, upgrade all the things, and then I'll go gift, you know, things to people once I actually have what they like and, you know, their loved gifts and whatnot. The competence one is another one, because with farming games, you constantly have new upgrades. So you start off with, you know, oh, okay, here's a like a rusty hoe or whatever. We should have gone with a rusty watering can. We'll go with that one instead. Then you can
For
upgrade it to, you know, copper.
international listeners, a hoe is the tool used for tilling soil. No derogatory
No,
language.
I meant the other one. Yeah.
Yikes,
yeah, we'll just bypass that. But so you work towards that, and then you feel competent because you're like, cool, I went deeper in the mine, I got all these copper ores. Now I can get the copper watering can, which will to do, you know, X, Y, and Z. And then the relatedness, the one I had already talked about with the conversing with NPCs, there was actually a few people, which, by the way, just slight tangent, I have found Reddit to be actually a really good source of getting people to give opinions on games, depending on the game, because farming simulators and games like Cozy Grove and whatnot don't usually have those like kind of shite people like you would find if you went to like the GTA subreddit. So I'm not going to say all of them are good, but I got over 500 responses for the farming simulators. I had to go through over 500 responses of short answer questions. That was fun. But for all of them, they all basically resonated on all of those points. But there were a few people specifically that said speaking with the villagers in games actually really helped with their social anxiety. It was like the first step for them, because you can't really make them hate you at all. Like, and I mean, you can divorce the character in Stardew Valley, and then like they won't really like you. But aside from that, you can really do anything. And then from there, you can join, you know, the subreddits or Discord communities or things like that, and then chat with other people. Hi, babies. About this game that you share. So it allows for people to, I don't know, communicate better. And I feel like that's been really, really important over these last 18 months. I know that I joined a Discord community through a YouTube streamer. And now I talk to these people like every day, and we share so many different video games in common, and we'll even like make recommendations to each other. I just finished a game and I was telling them about it, asking their opinions. Okay, what did you think was the story? Anything else I could play along these lines? I feel like I just went completely off what you asked.
I mean,
me,
that
and
was,
I don't actually remember what you asked.
Like,
me.
What's your opinion of Farming Simulator? So that was a really excellently woven in answer. I'm just going to throw that out there. chat are coming up.
That, as well.
apparently, chat reckon that we need to do some co-op games.
Need some co-op. Okay.
There's a call for
hi,
that.
Mandy.
from our participants in chat. I'm gonna throw you a curveball now and just say that I love the idea of farming simulators. I own Stardew Valley, but I am crap at them. Because I get
really,
it's happened with Breath of the Wild. I'm like half the way through it, but I end up putting a game down, and I come back to it and go, "Oh, it's too big," and I get all overwhelmed, and then I end up just going, "Yeah, I don't know what to do," and putting it down, and going and playing like a football match on Pro Evo because that's easier. And like it's so annoying because I know Stardew Valley is an amazing game, but I start it and go, "There's too much to do. I'm out of stamina. I'm dead. Ah, crap."
Have you looked into any of the mods for Stardew Valley? Because if you have it on the PC, there, oh my god, there are so many mods and so many quality of life improvements. It's amazing. It makes the play so much better as well as longer lasting, because like there's a Stardew Valley expanded that adds like over 20 NPCs with their own specific heart events, their own marriageable candidates. There's that one and Ridgewood, I think, something along those lines. So there's two different ones that proper like expand the whole world. And then if you get, you know, nervous that there's so many different things to do, you can get the mods that make some things easier just because you just don't want to do it. Like I've restarted the game several times to like do different things, have different farm layouts or whatever. But because I've done the same thing in the beginning so many times, I kind of just do a mod to like let me bypass that stuff now. I'm like, I don't want to grind for 10 hours again.
Yeah, I think
so. I recommend mods to help you along with that.
If you've been with me before on stream, you'll know that I'm not someone that like tries the 100% stuff. I'm more kind of like I've got a couple hundred games in my Steam library plus others. Let's play it, beat it, put it down, move to the next one. And that's not like, you know, I want to enjoy the game, but it's like, yep, yeah, let's do it and then move on. So like the other struggle that I kind of have with that is it's like, oh, it's so hard to get going and I don't know exactly what to do. And then like you can play a game that's maybe like more linear and it's like, right, well, I beat all the levels and then I'm done and I don't have to collect everything. Because as you say, like you don't want to, you know, like, I mean, even for instance, like, you know, platinum trophies on PlayStation or, you know, like you have
to beat
a game again to like, you know, but like on a different difficulty or without using this. And I'm just like, I have no time for this, I'm afraid.
Yeah, I have too many other games to play. Like, I legit feel guilty when I buy a new game because I'm, like, looking at my stack of games. Like, I bought Kingdom Hearts 3 ages ago. Still haven't played it. It's just chilling on my shelf over there. Haven't played it. I beat all the other ones in preparation to play Kingdom Hearts 3, and then I just never played it.
Yeah,
ain't nobody got time for that.
I feel like, I mean, even, so I just thought then, like, I pretty much everyone else on the planet that owned a Switch, I played Animal Crossing last year. But even then, I approached it in, like, a goal-orientated way. Like, I was like, okay, I'm going to get the island how I want it to look. I'm going to get a 5-star island, then I'm done. Took me 100 hours. But then I was like, okay, I've reached the point where I'm happy to put this game down and move on to the next one. And I've been on my island a couple of times since to, like, tidy up, because I do feel guilty that weeds and all that. But like I don't care so much about like the furniture. I'll bang some like fun stuff on there. Like someone actually on stream, it was a friend of mine, went around and like used dream codes and rated everyone's island and give like a little tour. And so I've got like some fun stuff. Like I have a book on an oven. you know, because I've got a real hunger for knowledge, and I wanted that to come through in my Animal Crossing zone, you know? And, like, that in of itself is a great joke, but it doesn't look great. It looks like I've just chucked a bunch of furniture in a room, like, much like my office set up behind me.
This is only clean because of this tree.
So it's really interesting that, like, you know, so Kingdom Hearts, for example, I bought, like, the big pack of all three games, HD 2.5 cocktail remix.
That's what I have, yeah.
Whatever it is. And, like, I played the first one and, like, beat it. That final boss was a joke, by the way. No spoilers, but sweet lord. Could not be bothered. And it just went on forever and there was no breaks. Oh, my God. Like, poor game design. Just saying. And, like, I beat it and I was like, no intention to do any of the hard stuff because I ain't got the time to grind it out and just haven't picked up the second one since.
The second one was really good. I did enjoy that one. And then the one for the DS, the 348 over 2 days, whatever the number is for that. That one was quite fun too. But like Kingdom Hearts, the storyline is so unbelievably convoluted that I actually have to watch something on YouTube to explain the storyline to me for every game that I play, because I'm like, wait, what? There's multiple of one person and they're all like named the same thing, but they're different people. It hurts my brain.
Yeah, I've heard, like, I know people who are very, like, I know people who have, like, beaten every Kingdom Hearts game, and like their advice is just like, don't try and understand it, just read it, because they do stuff and then retcon it, and then they'll do another spin-off that retcons the retcon, and it's just like, mm-hmm. I have not got the cognitive ability to process that.
No, definitely.
I mean, like, you know, I barely manage to keep up with what's going on with Final Fantasy VII at the moment, and that's a game that's one of my favorites.
Is it? I remember that's the one that had the two discs for the PS1 back in the day, right?
Well, the
Final Fantasy VII.
Final Fantasy VII, VIII, and IX were 3/4 discs back in the day.
Oh, that was more my brother's game than mine, but I do remember that it came on the multiple, and that was, like, a big deal.
Oh, yeah, I mean, big deal back in the day, and it was all because of big CGI cutscenes.
I didn't know that. Cloud is in Final Fantasy VII, right? That's the one that he's from?
Yep.
Yeah, he's in Kingdom Hearts as well. He's actually kind of difficult to beat.
Yeah, he was
depending on the difficulty of the game. No. No, he was not.
So was your love of farming games like an inspiration to like then do some survey research on it?
Yes and no. I had recently started playing Cozy Grove, and I actually did that article first. I don't know if you have heard of it. It came out a few months ago. And then because I just enjoy Farming Simulator so much and I had a lot of fun writing about Cozy Grove, I'm like, you know what? I'm going to see what people think about it. I had just also started playing Story of Seasons, Pioneers of Olive Town. I think that was the one. That one came out recently as well. And it was just really relaxing. And I watched people stream that game and Stardew Valley and everything, and talking to people in the community that I had mentioned. They also talk about how, you know, it helps with their helps relax them and things like that. So I was like, okay, I wonder why. But let's go ask a few hundred people what they think about it. Get a less, I'm afraid to phrase this, not a doctor of psychology point of view. I want to know what people actually think about it themselves, if that makes sense. But it did partially come from the fact that I love farming simulators. I have played them my whole life. The one Harvest Moon for the GameCube, I think, was the one that I played the most until Stardew Valley, and then that one kind of just took over my life for a while.
I mean, you hit on something kind of pretty interesting there, and Covey Grove, okay, how did we feel about the limitations of time play? Because I know it divides opinion. I know people from like the Take This community who are like, it's great because it fragments my play. And then people that be like, no, it's bad game design. If I want to play a game, I should be able to play the game.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure
that was the first article I did. I surveyed people who played Cozy Grove and I asked them, what do you think about the limited playtime? You know, what do you like about it and what don't you like about it? And there were people, they were even on both sides of the fence. Some people really liked that they looked forward to it every day. They would either play it when they first got up, so it was about an hour of playtime, or it would help them relax and they would play it before bed. So they really liked that limited playtime. But then there's other people, which understandably, let's say they have, you know, kids, full-time job, things like that, so they can only play video games on like Saturday. Okay, that one day a week, so you can only do one day in Cozy Grove, like that makes it kind of a little bit difficult. So I can definitely see both arguments for that.
So, I mean, again, what I'm hearing is that really you should have like the option to do both. Like it should give you the facility to tweak that for your own user experience. Or is that just too blue sky? Like,
no, I mean, I think that would be really good. Now, depending on the platform, like on the Switch, it's rather easy to change the date. I mean, people do it all the time for Animal Crossing. Like, that's pretty much just
cheating.
How people play Animal Crossing. Hey, I am way too lazy to wait a full day for Tom Nook to move my goddamn museum. I'm gonna load it to the next day so I can go and finish doing my decoration. Like. And that was Nintendo's original goal as well, was to get people to, you know, we were going to play it a little bit each day because it's in real time and everything. And then it got released literally 2 days after everything closed in Ireland, 2 days after the universities and everything closed. It came out when I had COVID, too. I also had it then, so that was fun. So I had to beg a friend to pick it up for me because I reserved it at GameStop. And I'm like, please bring me Animal Crossing.
I'd just like to say a blanket disclaimer, Blind Psyche makes no association with conspiracy theories linking the release of Animal Crossings and COVID, just putting that out there.
Disney Plus as well, because that came out in Ireland, like, right when we closed everything down, too. So I feel like Disney and Nintendo were in cahoots. They're like, hey, let's release all these cool things. Oh, let's have a pandemic. We'll do that. I mean, like, JK, I don't actually believe that, but...
Guest views are their own.
Fun. It is a fun conspiracy theory, I suppose. But I remember first getting it, and people were putting like 600 hours into the game in the first month because we had nothing else to do. And I can't, you know, go outside or talk to people. So let's go make my villager's yard look pretty. Let's go plant some flowers. I can watch them grow. That means I've accomplished something. So it was really, really helpful. Whenever I see people, like with tweets or, you know, proper like news articles talking about how, you know, oh, kids, they play too much Animal Crossing during the pandemic, or they play too many video games, blah, 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 blah. I'm like, you don't. Animal Crossing saved so many gamers over the last year.
You mean those kids' primary source of social interaction with their friends? You mean those games? Oh, yeah, they're terrible for children. Imagine children like spending time with other children like they do, say, every day in school. Wild.
Right, I know. It's like people don't understand that we can actually speak with each other in video games and whatnot. And now Nintendo Online is absolutely atrocious, and it takes like half an hour to get 8 people onto your island.
Yeah.
But aside from that, even if you're not interacting in the game, you meet people who also play the game. Like there were so many like catalog parties and things like that, you know, so that you can go and you can catalog all the items so you can get them, you know, for yourself. There was just such a community that got built around it, and so many people were able to talk to others that they would never normally, you know, have met across the world or completely different age groups, all that kind of stuff. So it just, this whole hour thing that's going on in China. And then I saw on Twitter today, an Irish radio station was asking, so do you think that Ireland should impose this? And I'm like, why? And I actually commented on it. I was like, so are we going to start limiting only 1 hour a day of Netflix or 1 hour a day of reading? Because let's be real, I can immerse myself in a book. Usually when I read one book for like in a day. I can't, like, I generally can't set it down. That's like 6 hours of my life immersing myself in another world that I'm reading. Why is that better than me doing that same thing in a very narrative story in a video game that also helps with my hand-eye coordination?
I mean, it's funny you mentioned that. I actually watched a very good YouTube video. It was a presentation at GDC by Take This As Own, Dr. Rachel Coet, that addressed that. What was the terminology she used? A pleasure cocoon? And like, so you finding your pleasure cocoon in a book, that's completely legit, but doing it in a game, you're evil.
Yeah, right? Like that just doesn't make any sense to me. Okay, so I want to read about fantasy and magic in a book. Okay, now I want to go play a character who can actually do magic in a game. Why is that worse?
It's just a strange phenomenon, and I think, you know, we kind of, it's a nice sort of segue we kind of got into here, because we talk about the news, and we so broadly speaking, we mentioned moral panic, and here's me about to butcher other much more astute and qualified people, you know, like branding it. But essentially, it means where people far overestimate the negatives of a thing because they're scared about it because it's new and shiny. Like, imagine the way original kind of, like, you know, like as we evolved, fire was new and scary at one point. You know, I was like, oh gosh, we better not go near that. There was, you know, moral panic. Like, reading was a moral panic in ancient Greece. If people write stuff down, they won't remember it and they'll be more stupid. So this has just happened throughout eons and eons. Video games, yeah, for some reason, has just kind of sustained itself for a long time.
Been going on for decades, and this whole time we've still been in that mind frame, especially if we talk about violent video games. That's just,
oh, let's not
yeah, we won't open that door for this stream, but it's,
well, you can come back for a sequel and we can say that one up, like,
but that is not my area of expertise, though it is part of the review that I had mentioned. I do have a section on it, but it's not my expertise. So Professor Christopher Ferguson, I'm sure you've heard of him, he was actually my external examiner for my viva, for my PhD.
Nice.
Which was pretty cool. Yeah. He's the one that put me up for the award as well.
Oh, wow. That's awesome. I'm so if you want to learn, if you'd like to learn more about moral panics, I thoroughly recommend Moral Combat by Christopher Ferguson and colleague Patrick Markey. Great book. Would read. Let's swing back the other way, like, you know, because when everyone's expecting us to turn right, let's turn left. One of the most interesting things for me was obviously at the beginning of this year, the Oxford Internet Institute, or Institute of Internet Studies, I forget which one it is, I apologize if that's wrong, but they did the, you know, now sort of newsworthy study of playing games is potentially associated with positive well-being. They don't make claims.
You cited me in that paper, by the way.
Oh, wow. Wow. Hold on. I'm going to leave. You can host the stream yourself. That's me.
Okay.
And, you know, that was like, I had people emailing me being like, Chris, have you seen this? Like, this, they're not saying games are bad. Oh, my goodness. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, like, and I was like, yeah, yeah. The bit that, like, surprised me the most was that they were given the data. That had me on the floor. I was like, Nintendo and EA gave them the data? Like, yeah. Holy crap! I was like, what? And everyone was like, why is that important? I was like, because this doesn't happen.
No, it doesn't.
Like, so, like, you know, you talk about the power of, like, the media, and again, let's not go down that rabbit hole. But to have, like, just a single news article that put video games in a positive light was, like, revolutionary. Mm-hmm. And I mean that literally, like, revolutionary,
literally, yeah.
Right? It's great, and, you know, we were, again, that's just a good segue, because this is how you host things, everyone. I'm a professional. You have this sort of thing where you have academic research over here and, like, the media over here, and the intersection is usually pretty bad. It's very selective. It's very, you know, again, moral panics feed into it. Like, you have one, you know, paper that seems to have all the same data as all the other papers that link video games to violence. I'm not going to name names, but I could, but I won't. You know, and the data seems to be the same, and it's like, oh, well, this clearly is correct. I remember, for those that don't know, I'm actually studying, like, my PhD in psychology and looking at video games, mental health, hence this conversation. But I remember I read one paper, and they were like, our methods for this were validated by my terminology's escaping me, but they did, like, a pre-study. I forget, there's a proper way for that. And they were a pilot study, yeah, and they were like, our data for that's available upon request. And I was like, oh, is it now? oh, is it now? Okay. I bet if I requested it, I'd still be waiting. You know, sorry, rant over. But you get those kind of associations and those links, and that just self-perpetuates. You know, again, I'm literally quoting Dr. Richard Coit here. But, like, it feeds the beast, it feeds into moral panics, and it is really hard to change that discourse at all. And then we've got people like yourself who are actively trying to change that. The problem also being is that knowledge is kind of stored in this ivory tower. and trying to disseminate that and get it out and then sort of put that into the news is a much harder battle to try and fight. So firstly, I acknowledge you, comrade, in joining me in this battle, but like, oh Lord, is it difficult.
It really is, yeah. And that's exactly like what I said, exactly why I started writing like my own blog and whatnot. I write for my website as well as the website fictiontalk.com. I've done a couple of articles there as well. And it's just because, so let's say even with the fancy review that I have published, the one that's, you know, been cited by the Oxford Institute and whatnot, cool. But it's behind a paywall of a journal that unless you have access to that journal through like a university, you're not really going to be able to read it. So I actually have the Word document because it's copyrighted otherwise. I have the Word document available on my ResearchGate so that people can actually read it without having to pay like $40 or something like that for just one article. It's absolutely ridiculous. Now I understand for, you know, academic publications, it's people can get vetted and make sure the research was done properly. Because yes, I've said that I surveyed people on Reddit, but like for all you know, I could have just made all of that up. Like there's nobody, I didn't. I have the data. Like I have the actual Excel sheet.
Is the data available upon request?
It is, I can send it to you if you'd like. although I didn't ask their permission, the people who took the survey. It wasn't the same as an academic one, you know, you can use it in, you know, academic publication or whatever. But they all knew that it was going to be like in a blog article and stuff. But that's why I'm trying to do that. I want to make it accessible. And that's why I agreed to do this. I want people to hear research about how video games can be good for us, why some of these reasons are, as opposed to just going and looking at all of the, you know, oh, GTA or Call of Duty caused this mass shooting, or we have to limit the playtime to an hour because otherwise it's going to melt their brains. Like, that's, get out of here with that.
Yeah. So what do you think is kind of, obviously, you know, you're working on these blog posts and stuff, like what's next? What do you think is the next step in this war we're waging?
Getting just journals and like newspapers and magazines and everything, getting them to move away from that negative narrative. Like a journal that I submitted one of my papers to, they just flat out refused it because they're like, no, none of your results make sense. Video games aren't good for you. And I'm like, did you not read my paper? Did you not see how I demonstrated with statistical, beautiful, you know, P is less than 0.05-ness? But okay, no, video games are really bad for you. So I think we really just need everybody to be able to accept that there are two sides to every fence. And even if you're more on one side than the other, you have to be able to recognize that there is some research that's going to support whatever side you're not on. And obviously, I don't think that all of those studies are conducted properly, and they probably don't think that all the studies about the positives are conducted properly. But you have to accept it. You can't just choose to publish something only because you agree with what it says, you know, just reject everything. You're like, oh, you know, I don't agree with that. I don't care that the science was done properly. We're just not going to publish you.
Yeah, I mean, right? I'm a big believer in, like, you know, not living in like an echo chamber, you know, like I have made myself more blind by reading some of these research papers that link video games to violence because they're that awful. But like, I've read them. Like, I remember tweeting, I was like, trying to sum up the video games and violence debate in as few words as possible because it's a waste of time in my registration document. Like, it was just like, I had to read some papers, I had to give it some references, but my Lord, was it awful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was really interesting. The review, like I said, it has a section. I talk about social games, extra games like Wii Fit and ones like that, and then there's a section on violent video games. And it was hilarious. The reviewers that I had two completely different sides. One of them was actually Professor Chris Ferguson. And the reason I knew that is because he signed his review, which is also why I asked him to be my external examiner. But anyways, he was like, no, okay, you can't say that there are any negative effects because it doesn't affect aggression at all. I'm like, okay, tweak wording. And then on the other side, there was this guy saying, no, you can't say that it can be helpful for, you know, pro-social behavior, even if there's social activity. I'm like, but I'm citing a paper that demonstrated that that's the case. I'm not making that claim. I'm saying they made that claim. how am I supposed to, like, you know, put both of their viewpoints together?
I think this feeds into stuff that has been said by much more qualified people than I, and it's just come up in chat, but so the games I get most, I'm going to use the term angry, that's not really the right word, right? Yeah. Is that it's not actual anger, it's frustration. Like, I referenced before, like, I like sports games. I'm from Liverpool, I love football. And sometimes the game just decides you're going to lose. Like, it just turns on a magic magnet and you just cannot get the ball in the net for love nor money, right? That gets me wanting to throw a controller at the wall more than, like, going on God of War and slicing up some mythical creatures, right? And that's part of the debate, in that perhaps the measures that people are doing self-reported, by the way, and that means that you fill out a little survey yourself and there's methodological questions and challenges that should be acknowledged around that. Like, how reliable are we ourselves to fill out surveys? But, like, you know, that maybe we're not actually measuring aggression, we're measuring maybe frustration, which is an entirely different thing. So for those listeners, so in chat I got mentioned the hot sauce. So for those that don't know, want some of these violence and video game studies, the measure they use was you'd come in and you would play a violent or non-violent game, and then as you were leaving, you'd be asked to put hot sauce on a foodstuffs, knowing that the next person would then come in and have to eat it. They suggested, putting it mildly, that the more hot sauce that you put on meant the more violent you were. Try and work that out, right? What if I just really like hot sauce? What if I think I know it's John coming in there behind me, and I know he loves some spicy stuff, so I'm like, there you go, John, mate. Mm-hmm. You know, like, if you're sitting there in the audience going, that sounds ridiculous.
It is. And we're not talking about just one study here.
Oh,
this
no.
This has been replicated using the hot sauce method.
Yeah, that became the gold standard for reasons.
Mm-hmm. That is literally how they measured aggression after playing violent video games. I mean, like, there's other ones as well, but that one is the main. I don't understand how that research gets published. And it's like, yeah, cool. Putting hot sauce, that's obviously a demonstration of you being aggressive. Oh, but you say that video games are good? Nah, get out of here. I'm not putting you in my journal.
So you mentioned there, you mentioned pro-social games. Let's just sort of switch folks to that for a moment. So because this is something I found in, like, my own sort of investigation and writing, that, like, the way even people define video games is really quite challenging, right? Because I'm looking particularly at games that I'm calling digital games with a purpose, and I've given that a very specific title because it's about games that have, say, like, explicit meaning and intention with the creation. Other games such as, like, Cozy Grove or Animal Crossings are deemed cozy games. I've seen that used in a paper. Pro-social games. And one of the problems I've encountered is that as a community, people call things different things. So I read in a paper that was a violence paper, they had people playing Grand Theft Auto, and then in their pro-social conditions, they had Lemmings and Tetris. And, like, I always like to joke, that's like comparing apples, oranges, and bananas. The other famous one is comparing people who play Grand Theft Auto and Madden, because they're the same. So when we talk about pro-social games, what type of games are sort of you referring to that might have these type of effects?
So by pro-social, I generally mean, like, co-op, but also what was shown in... Sorry, I know I keep going back to the violent video games, but that's not really my intention, but it'll help elucidate my answer here. Part of what I talked about in that section of the review is that when you add in the pro-social aspect of, okay, you're going to kill all of these zombies, but you're doing it because you're protecting, you know, X person, this NPC or whatever, that actually increases people's pro-social behavior and, like, their social skills and things like that, which I find really interesting. Literally just including, okay, you're doing the same thing. You're still killing all these zombies, but you're doing it so that they don't harm this person, which I find very interesting. But pro-social, I mean, like, generally co-op, or even I would consider games like Animal Crossing, where even if you're not playing on the island with somebody, you're chatting to them about, hey, oh, I like your design. Where did you get that code? I cannot even begin to describe how much people go into detail on the stuff that they designed for Animal Crossing. I am not that creative. I just, like, steal a bunch of people's ideas and they kind of, like, mix it up together. But even that, I would count as pro-social. You're still doing something with the video game with somebody else. So you're promoting social behavior, really.
And I think this is another thing that people like really underplay. So again, like I referenced before, like one of my favorite games is Final Fantasy VII. I'm in like at least like a couple of communities of people that all love that game. It's a single player, you know, 70-hour RPG that came out in like 97. You know, but there is an entire community around people that just enjoy it and talk about it. And yet, yes, we have the remake and all those sorts of things. But like, it really can bring people together having these really insightful mm-hmm. and interesting discussions, right? And that in of itself is, well pro-social, right?
It's the same as people getting together for like a book club, I feel. They're talking about a book that they've read. They're talking about the themes. Oh, what did you think of this character? Or how did you like the ending? It's the same thing. You're just doing it with a video game that, you know, takes 60 plus hours as opposed to a book that takes like 5 or 6 hours. But it's the literal same thing.
Wait, you mean book clubs don't like, sit in a room and read page by page together?
Oh my God. I read ridiculously fast. I could not do that. I would be like halfway through the book by the time people are like maybe a quarter of the way through it. So I would just be like, I'm going to leave now. I'm going to go get a drink. Let me know when you're on my page. Probably how I would deal with that.
I mean, I do a lot of my reading like via like audiobook as well, and like obviously, you know, you can maybe change the speed, but the person that read it is the way they read it. I recently mm-hmm. listened to I reread Dune, but the audiobook version for that is like 26 hours long. It's a big book anyway, but like, you know, that's 26 hours of real time. I've listened to the book.
Yes. Like that's too much time. How long is the book, like page-wise?
I actually don't know, because I've only ever listened to it. But I'd imagine, like, at a guess, like 1,000 pages or something. I don't know. That's a complete guess.
No, it would have to be, because I don't really like audiobooks. I read much quicker than somebody speaking it to me, so it just drives me nuts. And I can't not multitask. So if I'm listening to an audiobook, I'm going to miss half of what happens because my brain is just going to go elsewhere. But I was looking at an audiobook. It was like 400 pages and it was about 6.5 hours.
Yeah.
So yeah, it would have to be about 1,000 pages at least.
I can confirm Dr. Halbrook does enjoy podcasts though. Just saying.
Sure. We'll go with that. We'll go with that.
Okay. So I'm trying to, we've covered a lot of ground there, and I apologize for kind of ran around a little bit, but it's just kind of really important because of how all these threads interweave, right? When you're looking at sort of like video game research and things like that. So I've asked kind of like, what do you think comes next? Like, what is the next thing that you physically want to work on? What's like next in the pipeline? So less like blue sky, but what have like you got coming up? Oh, you appear. There we go.
That would be next in the pipeline is getting me a job.
Okay, that's fair.
But in general, what I would really like to continue on with my research, and I did, so in Ireland, we have the Irish Research Council. They do funding every year. It's like it's ridiculously hard to get into, but I did an application last year, was so very close to making it to the next round, so we're going to try it again this year. But I want to basically pick apart what are the best aspects of video games for our mental health and how can we incorporate those into other games. So not just, okay, people who like farming simulators, that's going to help with their anxiety. But people who like all genre of games, is there something that we can take from the really relaxing atmosphere of games like Stardew Valley? What exactly is that? How can we satisfy that autonomy, competence, and relatedness in something else? And I dabble in some game dev myself. I mean, I'm working on it. I'm not like the best programmer in the world, but I'm trying. I have a couple of games if anybody wants to play them.
Are they on your website?
They're not great. Yes. I think.
For listeners, all the information for all this will be attached to wherever you found this. It'll be in a description somewhere.
But I would really like to continue with the game dev, and I would love to be able to make that game myself, which is kind of what I'm working towards right now since I don't have a job. But the next step is to get a proper permanent paying position so that I can update my immigration status and they won't kick me out of the country.
That's, I mean, that's, number one. I can see why that is up on the priority list. It's funny you mentioned game dev, you know, and like I say this as someone who is like 8 months into the PhD, and obviously my PhD is in, you know, like psychology, but like, and you know, I may well be looking at people like Dr. Kelly Dunlap for inspiration, but like I'd love to go back and do some actually like do a master's in like game design or something like that, because then I feel like, you know, because and again for listeners' benefit, like we may be talking in a very positive way, but we mentioned before like the Nintendo data and stuff, there's kind of a, I'm gonna say, an issue with like the industry and like researchers working together all that well, as in it basically doesn't happen.
Nope, not so, at all. That's why we were so shocked that Nintendo shared their data.
Yeah, that was like huge for that reason. And I think like, how do you become the complete package? Well, like, it's one thing to, like, go in there and say, yeah, this is the research and this is the kind of thing that we want to produce. But it's another thing to then actually try and get a company to make that or incorporate those without them going, mm-hmm. okay, that's great, but can we put some microtransactions in? Because money. different kettle of fish. And I think a lot of people, and it does come with the advent of like the accessibility to like game dev. Like anyone can download Unity and start like going through tutorials, and there's so much good content on the internet that's available for free. There is that part of me that's like, well, if I just go back and learn how to make games a little bit myself, that's going to obviously boost my credentials, but I'll be able to say, okay, so researchers suggested this, let's do this, like, and here's how we might be able to do it.
No, I think it's actually it's a good idea. I do regret, I was going to focus on some game dev during my PhD, and then it just ended up working away from that, probably because I did a PhD in 3 years instead of like five, like people normally do, so there wasn't really time for the game dev. But now I'm trying to really get into it more, and I think it's going to be really helpful with the research going forward. Now I'm not a great like artist or anything, so I use Game Maker Studio because it's 2D only, and Game Maker language is like infinitely easier to learn than C#, so I've been working on that. But I recommend that you should work on it during your PhD. I think it'll help you in the future with jobs and whatnot too.
It's funny you mention that, and I say it with a little bit of tongue in cheek. But during my like registration viva, I was like legitimately asked why I hadn't made the game myself for my research. Like that was a legitimate question I had to provide an answer to, and the answer just was because I don't have a degree in game design nor the time or resources to just make a game, particularly like as beautiful or as nuanced as the type of games I want to look at that center around like mental health. Like, mm-hmm. I, you know, I've not got the facilities for that, I'm afraid.
Yeah, no, my art style is very basic. I'm doing good on the programming yet. I'm really learning all of that, but I might have to pay somebody to do the art for me because I can't. I'm not good at it. Even simple pixel art, I'm not the best.
I mean, obviously, you know, I'm blind, so art isn't necessarily my jam. Like, I enjoy it, and like I do my own thumbnails and stuff, but like apart from that, you know, big yikes.
Yeah, I can't see all that well either.
I feel like this is a question that, I mean, I've had it, but like I'm gonna ask you anyway because it's kind of obligatory for this type of interview, but like, how have you found researching games? Has it impacted your play with games at all?
It definitely has, especially with when I want to write about a game. Like I knew I wanted to write about Cozy Grove. I knew I wanted to write about the farming simulators and everything. And I love playing those games myself, obviously, but because I started researching them, I now also have in the back of my mind, like I'll take screenshots on the Switch. I'm like, oh, I might be able to put this in my blog later. So I will say it has made me enjoy some games a little bit less, because I'm not just immersing myself in the game world anymore. I'm like, oh, I could write an article about this, or I could research this. So it's great, but at the same time, like, I want to play Cozy Grove. I don't want to think about it psychologically.
Yeah, I always kind of like joke that like engaging with psychology is like akin to opening Pandora's box a little bit. Like once you do it, you cannot put the lid back on that.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Yeah,
it's
definitely true.
I mean, I started my streaming career, quote unquote, and we played Life is Strange. And I have plenty of opinions on Life is Strange. Some good, mostly negative, in my opinion. They are just my opinion. But like, because I was looking at it through that, like, well, I'm playing it as a gamer, I'm hosting it as like a streamer, but also I'm a psychologist in the brain. I couldn't turn off that analytical kind of spin on it, and it was like, you know, the game's wild. It goes off in some very weird and wonderful places. David Lynch definitely directed the last episode, I can tell you that. But it's funny how like you just can't begin to turn that off. Like, I play games and go, oh, I'd love to do a study on this, you know, or like, oh, there's something you could do with this. I'll start with my example, but one of the written questions I have here is, if you had no limitations whatsoever, what would your ideal piece of research be? And I asked that because mine would be a longitudinal study, so a study over a long period of time. I would get people to play Celeste and record their journey, like, right the way through it, because in my opinion, Celeste is the perfect game, and it also has very explicit and excellent themes around mental health and anxiety, and it's just brilliant. But it is also quite hard. It's got a bit of a difficulty curve and stuff, but it's freaking amazing. So, like, yeah, sorry. So that's me just saying what mine is. What would your no limitations blue sky research be?
Being able to work on game dev without having to worry about money or immigration. I would like to be able to put all of my psychological knowledge into a game and just have the time and the resources to do it. Honestly, immigration is a big thing that hangs over my head when it comes to my research. I can't just take like a 6-month postdoc or a short-term lecturing position because I'm on the last year of my you can find a job before you have to get out of the country visa. So honestly, the immigration is the hugest limitation for me. And if that would go away, yeah, I would probably just want to focus on game dev and putting my actual psychology into it myself.
So what would that game look like if you can sort of say without, I don't know, like spoilering or you know?
I'm like, okay, because I am trying to work on it while I am unemployed. So how do I make it spoilery free?
Or just, you know, I don't want, you know, to sell your ideas in case there's some avid listeners.
I know they go off and they develop the game before I can because they're better at it. I would like to incorporate the findings from the Cozy Grove and the Farming Simulator surveys, the aspects that people really appreciate that make them feel autonomous and competent and relatedness. So a decently rich storyline in terms of NPCs, because then it can make you feel like connected to them. Different difficulties. So, okay, you've completed X. Awesome. Now you're working towards this, which is more difficult, as well as I'm not the biggest fan of games that are a pure linear storyline. I like having at least some option. And I love games like, I don't know if you ever played Detroit Become Human or Heavy Rain or anything by Quantic Dreams, which really is also just Beyond Two Souls, 3, but depending on your choices, your characters can die at any time and they can branch off to like different storylines and completely different aspects of the game. And I think that's brilliant. And I think that has a huge play on autonomy. Now, I will never be that good of a game dev. It's just not going to happen.
I mean, you never know.
Never be that.
You never know.
I'll never be that good of an artist, that's for sure. Detroit Become Human was actually the first game that I played when I got a PS4 a whole 3 years ago. Took me that long to finally get a gaming console from this decade. Well, I guess last decade now, because it's 2021. But I booted it up, and there was just this beautiful picture of the lady that introduces you to the game, and I'm like, these graphics. Sorry, tangent. But I would like to incorporate all of the aspects that people say make them feel good. The nice music, relaxing atmosphere, then feeling like they have control, making things a little bit difficult. So just capturing everything in a self-determination theory, really.
Okay, so like in some kind of a self-determination theory game. That sounds pretty dope. I mean, I'd play it. Well, I mean, I say that.
Even if it was farming?
Let's be honest, I'd buy it with the full intention to playing it, and then it just live on the Steam list, and then I'd eventually get to it in like 3 years. But I'd pre-order, sign me up, take my money. I'm here for it. So okay. So you mentioned there like Detroit Being Human and stuff. Let's talk about those type of decision games then, because I'm a big fan of those. I've played through many of the Telltale games, for example. I mentioned Life is Strange before. I haven't played Detroit Being Human. It is one people have told me to play.
It's so good.
Like, for that reason. But one of my issues with it, issue sounds a bit strong, one of my things was like, particularly say with, I'm going to try and do this spoiler free, like The Walking Dead season one, for example. Like, there are certain things where you might get your outcome A or B, but like, because of the way the story's written, it doesn't matter which, because you'll still reach outcome C. You know, like Wolf Among Us is another one, which is like another example that came up. Like that is has a bit more diversification, but like, no matter how you cross the paths, you are still going to end up at point A, B, or C. And with the Walking Dead games, you know, they tried to include like multiple endings that they just kind of like glazed over in the next one, and they're just kind of like, well, no matter what happened, this terrible thing happened. So, story. How do you feel like you'd manage that type of aspect of? Because what I feel like I want to get from those games is that my choices matter. They give me like a sense of autonomy, like they make real impact. I don't want to save a character's life and then five chapters later they die anyway because they were going to die because they could have. You know, what's your opinion on that sort of thing?
Well, as far as if I would ever put it in a game myself, I would love to. I don't know if I have the creativity or the programming skills for that. Ask me in like a year when I've actually made a proper game, not a little mini platformer and an idle game that's on itch.io, which I put in the chat, by the way, the Jammy Productions. So when I can go beyond those. But I will say Detroit Become Human actually does a much better job than what you were just saying. So for instance, in the very first chapter, there's a police officer that if you save, they actually come up later in the game and can save a different character. If you don't save them, that character in the later chapters, they die. So it actually does have a pretty big impact. And any of the characters that you play can die at pretty much any time. And one of my characters did, and that completely changed the ending for the other characters. It took away a whole bunch of options because the one character had died. So I agree with you with some of the games, but I will say Detroit Become Human, I think, tackles those issues really, really well.
Well, you've heard it here first, chat. We're gonna have to get that on the list. I'm gonna have to play it. I will say, the link didn't get posted in chat. That's because of settings. So I've just give you permission if you want to repost that. But yeah, so that's it. That's fair enough because I think that was part of my you know, gripe a little bit is that it felt like my choices didn't matter. And if you can construct a game that is so well done, it didn't seem to work. Don't worry, I will post the link as if you're listening, it'll be in the description or whatever. You will be able to find it and you'll be able to play what I'm going to put my money on is a pretty good game, regardless of, you know, the I'm going to say humble attitude towards it.
So they were both made during game jams on itch.io. One of them was made in 72 hours, the other one was made in a week. So they're definitely not the best. The one that was made in 72 hours is actually the first game I ever made myself. Like, I literally had just started doing the game dev in Game Maker Studio. And it's a platformer called Hashtag Rage Quit because it's really, really difficult. And it takes, like, so many different tries to get to the end. My brother played it for, like, 20 minutes straight until he could finally get through all four levels without dying. He was very proud of himself.
That's pretty impressive. Pretty impressive. Okay.
Well, the other one is like kind of it was supposed to be an idle game, but it's just called The Munchies. And you take the character and you move around and you eat little pixel food like burgers and pizza and whatnot, which I will say I am quite proud of that pixel art. I did them myself and it did actually look pretty good. And then you get points. You get to unlock a pet who will go and help you eat the food and everything. And then you just continue to get points from there. It was eventually meant to be like an idle game, you know, like where when you leave the game, you come back and it's like done things for you. I just never continued on with that one because I wanted to start working on some other stuff. But those are the two games that I've.
Idle games are kind of like a universe I've never experienced. Like I know it exists, but I've never delved into it. Partly because like there's a part of my brain that just can't process it. Like, if that makes sense. Like, I know that, like, quintessentially, like, Animal Crossings, like, the world exists and you don't play it and it still moves. But, like, the idea of a game just, like, doing something on its own kind of, like, blows my mind a little bit. Because if you look at, say, a textbook definition of a game, it's kind of designed to include input from a player that moves things and does things, right? That's, like, literally a research paper textbook definition. And it's interesting that idle games kind of, they, you know, maybe adjacent to that.
Yeah, they're kind of, they have that fine line of, are they actually a game? I just did an article, the psychology of idle games, not on my website, on the other one, but I just wrote that article as well. And for any of the psychology people here, part of it is due to the like operant conditionings of B.S. Skinner. We're going way back to undergrad psychology, essentially he put rats inside of a box. He had them push a lever. They pushed the lever. They got a pellet. And then they would continue to push the lever even when they didn't get a pellet, because they're like, oh, okay, I do this. It gives me something good. That could also be applied to the idle games. You're like, okay, I bought this upgrade. Ooh, look at my big old fancy numbers. I know one of the questions that you're going to ask is some games that I've been playing recently.
Yep.
And I'm probably skipping over some of your other questions, but we'll go back to them. But on the topic of the idle games, I've been playing this game, it's on Steam, it's free on Steam actually, called Leaf Blower Revolution, an idle game. You literally just blow leaves off the screen. Like, it's unbelievably complex. I cannot even begin to tell you the complexity of this game. It's made in Game Maker Studio as well, which was kind of cool. But that's the whole point. You blow leaves off the screen and you try to get the numbers to be really, really high. Right now I'm at E to the 155 because like the person ran out of letters, so now it has to be in scientific notation because the numbers are so high. But I've been having a lot of fun with that one.
I can hear everyone listening now searching for that in Steam and are immediately looking at it and going like, what the honk is this?
No, seriously though. And it is free. You can there's some DLC, but it just gets you extra things in the game. You don't have to buy it. It's just, okay, you're impatient and you don't want to wait to get this, okay, go spend the €5 or dollar, whatever currency you have.
Oh, hold on, are we now talking about pay to win?
No, not at all. You can do it completely without it. It just makes it pay to shortcut. Pay to, if you want to be impatient.
Okay.
Sure. But you don't have to. You can definitely do it without having to do any of that stuff. But I also wanted to support the game dev, because it came out in like December and it got really, really popular because there was one particular YouTuber who had done some videos of it. And then from there, just everybody went off, and me included, started playing it. But so I wanted to give him some money since the game was free. Yeah. So he'd continue to do updates. And he has. And it is quite fun. I'll throw that out there. But that is one of the games that I have been playing. So we were talking about idle games, so I wanted to mention it.
No, well, one of the questions we got asked was, what's your views on QuickTime events?
Oh, the QuickTime events. They are extremely anxiety-inducing, and I love them for the most part.
What game came to mind when you heard of QuickTime events, out of interest?
Heavy Rain and Detroit Become Human.
Okay, because the one that came to my mind was Resident Evil 4. I just got an image of, like, smash A to run from Boulder. Like, then press L and R if you don't quick enough. Sploosh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's what Quantic Dream games are, the ones that I mentioned. If you don't hit the buttons at the right time or in the right order or whatever, your character, they just straight up die. But you're playing as other characters as well, so that character storyline is kind of just, they're just gone. And you just messed up, and sorry, not sorry, but you didn't hit the button quick enough. So they're fun, but oh my god, that any game that's going to give me anxiety is one that has QTE. As much as I love them, oh my god.
I think
I need to be in a real, like, proper mindset to be like, okay, I'm gonna be anxious, and that's fine.
Yeah, okay, so let's crack open a bit more of a philosophical debate, right? Okay, you know, maybe with your game dev hat on more than the psychology, right? But that, you know, one of the things they say that separates art from entertainment, and you know, let's not get into that debate in of itself, is that it makes you feel something. And I say, you know, one of the things that I enjoy about games the most is that it has that ability to make me feel something. Like, I'm partial to the odd horror game, you know, like Silent Hill 2, for example. The actual story is incredibly interesting, and psychologically, there's a heck of a lot to over, you know, chew on that. But it's the tension that gets you, right? It's that the screen is loading and you don't know what's going to be on the side of that door. You know, as opposed to, like, say, like, jump scares. You know, there's a difference there, I feel. Like, you know, it's the tension that when you are physically processing and concerned about, like, what's going to happen, the game's had a pretty impressive effect on you there. You know? And I think that's pretty powerful. So, like, how do you kind of feel about, like, games making you feel things? I realize that's a very broad question, actually.
It is a very broad question, yeah. I don't think all games should do that, but I do really enjoy when a game does do that. Like, I don't play the Leaf Blower game because I want to feel something. I don't play Mini Motorways because I want to feel something. I play it because I can turn my brain off and connect roads to houses or blow leaves off a screen. But I do also appreciate games that do have that storyline. Like the other game that I literally just beat it the other day. It's called The Last Campfire. I don't know if you've ever heard of it. It's on Switch. I don't know if it's on the PC yet, but I just beat it on the Switch. And it's a very psychological story. You play as this little, it's called an Ember. And the whole purpose of the game, it's like a slight platformer, but it's not quite just across the screen, but the camera like rotates with you depending on like where you're moving. But there's puzzles and everything, and the whole purpose is to help the forlorn, is what they're called, and their other little embers that have basically given up. And the whole thing is about helping them through that, giving them hope and everything. And there's like little, every puzzle, there's like little stories for this person, like, oh, they just, what were some of them? They signed on too many things at once and they just couldn't do it anymore. So the puzzle that you have to do just has like a whole bunch of aspects in it because that's what that person's issue was. And it really, really, it does. It makes you feel something. Because that, like, that's the point. You're supposed to be helping them through their like hopelessness. But my favorite part of the game is there's a couple of forlorn when you come up upon them that they say, I'm not ready for help right now. Not all puzzles are meant to be solved. And I'm like, Jesus, that, wow. I'm like, I want to do a puzzle, but at the same time, good on you, game, for recognizing that.
It sounds like, and I haven't played either of these games very much, but it sounds like a cross between Spiritfarer and Thomas Was Alone.
Mm-hmm. Like, I haven't played that one, but yes, on the Spiritfarer part, yet.
Yeah, and that's so, I mean, like, I'm just adding games to my wish list at this point from this conversation. Yep, we're going to play that, I'm going to buy that. But that sounds, like, fascinating. Like, again, like, you know, when a game has that ability to make you feel something, and, like, it's a really simple mechanic. Like, they've just said, you can't access this level yet. Mm-hmm. Right? And that's, you know, Super Mario does that. Like, oh, you need this number of stars to get on this ride, you know?
Oh, no, no. You can never go back and help them. They're just not ready to be helped. So they just stay there. So the whole message is you can't help everybody unless they want the help.
And that's the thing, right? And like that's where like it's gone the above and beyond, and like really mm-hmm. like, I think like and you probably know more about game dev than I do, but that's called like procedural rhetoric, in the way the game functions has affected you as a player, in that mm-hmm. you are sitting there thinking, well, I should be able to do this level. I have to help the embers. That's my job. And the game's going, nope, you can't do that, and that's the point.
Mm-hmm.
And like that, I mean, I'm like, procedural rhetoric is actually part of like some of my study area, and I have like a huge interest in it. I think Barrett Anderson has written some great papers on that. I would totally recommend reading, but it's such an interesting idea how like game mechanics can really affect play and expectation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because that's something I've ever encountered in a game. There's the, yes, you can't do this now because you need X, but as soon as you get that, you can come back and you can do it. I don't think I've ever played a game before where they're like, okay, we appreciate you trying to help this ember, but they don't want your help. Move on. Go to the next thing. And I was just like, that, it cut deep. When I was playing it, it cut deep. I was like, wow, that's really accurate. So that one definitely made me feel some. And I don't know if you've played Spiritfarer, but all the feels trips, man. I did not sign up for those feels trips. Like,
all right, let me get my other ranty hat on. I apologize in advance, but so I went to play Spiritfarer. I was super hyped. I saw like, yo, Take This were doing a bit of it, and I was like, oh, like Greek mythology. I love that. Like, you know, like the mental health themes around like loss and grief and stuff. Something very like close to me, and something I talked about a lot on stream. And I picked it up, and I quite like to play my Switch in handheld mode. It's like comfortable to me. I enjoy that. It was too small. The font size was too small for me to read, and there was no accessibility options. And I just put it down, and I can put it. I have a dock. I don't have a Switch Lite. I have a normal one. I can just plonk it in the dock and play it. But I was just so disappointed that I couldn't play it at that moment. And I was like, mm-hmm. Is this going to be like a struggle for me to see? Because that's a real shame. And like,
No, that's totally fair.
so I want to play it, and I attempted to, I just didn't, and I need to like plug it into like a big old TV and get on it. But yeah, but
No,
I know it
that's
makes people feel
I
things.
ran it. No, it does. It's I haven't beat it yet. They it actually just released a new update. So I now that I finished the last campfire, I want to go back and beat it. But I ran into that issue with Cozy Grove. You have to find like really, really small items, and the descriptions of where they're hidden are not always the most helpful. And playing it on the actual Switch, and I have a regular Switch as well, I can't always see it. So I had to put it on my TV sometimes to go, oh, that's the thing that I'm looking for. I can see it now that I'm playing on a 43-inch TV and not this. How big is the screen on the Switch?
5 inches, is it?
Yeah, it's not that big. And I don't have good eyesight either. Like, I can't see anything when I take my glasses off. I have double vision. So if I take my glasses off, I see two of everything. Even with my glasses on, I see one and then a shadow.
Yeah.
When I'm drunk, I see four.
I mean, I'm pretty sure like my vision improves after a couple pints of Guinness, but please drink responsibly. But that's personal opinion. Okay, so I feel again obliged to ask, and you don't have to answer, it's fine. But can you remember, like, were you willing to share an example where a game has made you cry? Has a game pushed you that far
Oh, see,
emotionally?
we've just gone too far. Actually made me cry. I don't know if a game's ever actually made me cry before. Definitely a lot of feels, but no, I don't think it's ever made me actually cry. I don't. It's not until recently, really, that I've been playing games like Cozy Grove and Spiritfarer. They were mostly just like I played a lot of Zelda, played Pokemon, played a lot of like proper like action RPGs, like Assassin's Creed. GTA is not going to make me cry. So it's not until recently that I really started getting into these games that make you think more. That wasn't really ever me until the last few years. So I don't think a game has ever really made me cry. But TV shows and movies don't really make me cry either. It takes a lot to make me cry. So
Okay.
proper feel strips, yes. Crying, no.
All right, okay. That's fair. That's fair. I would like to and I would like to see some support from this, so please leave comments right in if you'd like to see it as well. I hereby throw down the gauntlet. Play to the moon.
To the moon. Okay, I'll have to make a note. I have Celeste written on here as well.
Play to the moon and see if you don't
Okay.
cry at the end, because if you do, you have some very good emotional regulation.
I have no soul. So there you go.
Ah, that's where I've been going wrong in life.
Yeah. No, and my heart is how I take my coffee, black.
Okay, fair. Fair. I've
That's it. I just have no soul.
no rebuttal to that, I'll be honest.
So that's why I don't cry.
I like you know I like as I say, I enjoy emotive experiences. Like, I some games like make me feel a lot and stuff, and that's great. But yeah, okay, fair enough. Fair enough. Have
I
you
can see why. Did you see the comment with the nunchuck? I can see how that made you cry.
Yeah.
Oh no.
For context,
Oh, I love it.
I'll say one of our viewers, one of chatting in chat, chatting in chat. Yeah, that's a thing.
Chatting in chat, yes it
they hit themselves where it hurt with a nunchuck playing Skyward Sword on the Wii, and that, yeah, that's a field trip.
is. God, the Wii controls were the absolute worst. Can I just throw that out there? They were horrible.
It was a time and a place, the mid-noughties. Yeah, it's a good time, good stuff. So are you playing anything else? Anything else you wanna chat about?
Well, since I just finished the last campfire, there's a game that came out today called Kataria Fables. It's a new farming game. It just came out today, so I might check that out. But otherwise, I've just been playing the mini motorways. I'm sure you've seen things about that, and the leaf blower game. And I'm kind of just waiting until there's something else that calls to me. But I'm gonna check out the To the Moon and Celeste since I don't have anything like proper next on my list. I'm gonna take a look at those, depending on how much they are, because again, still unemployed. I only have so much money to spend on games, so they need to be cheap games. The last campfire was like 6 euros. It's the only reason I bought it.
Yeah,
Yay, indie games being cheap.
that's fair. That's fair. Okay, so let me think about. Okay, so you mentioned you like Pokemon, Legend of Zelda, right? Favorites for both of those series?
Ocarina of Time, though Breath of the Wild is really, really close second. I have to say Ocarina of Time is probably the best because of nostalgia. It was one of the first games that I ever played, so we're revealing my age here. I don't know what age you are, so I don't know if you had played it when it first came out as well, but that was one of the first games I ever played was Ocarina of Time. And for Pokemon, it has to be Pokemon Yellow. But again, that probably is a lot of just nostalgia-based. So my brother, he's 5 years older than me. He had Pokemon Red.
Yep.
And that came out in, 97? Something like that. So I was 4 or 5. And, you know, not really understanding that there's only one save file. And, of course, my mom made him let me play it. And he didn't want to let me play it. So she's like, fine, I'll just get her own. So she bought me Pokemon Yellow, and he was so pissed because he's like, well, I have Pokemon, she has Yellow, what? My mom's like, well, you should have let her play it then.
Okay, I thought that story was gonna go and I erased the save file, so I'm glad we took another direction. No.
I hope not. If I did, I'm sorry, Jamie. I don't think I did though. I was relatively good at that. I might have like saved it after doing things that he didn't want me to do, but I certainly would not have erased his save file. I was video game savvy enough at 5 to understand not to do that.
I will say though, Pokemon Yellow, like, it was a complete cash in because of the popularity of the TV show, but like, it was just great because you could have Pikachu and all three starters. You were an absolute powerhouse. Exactly. It was so good.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, you don't have to really like think about it in the beginning, which of the starters do I want?
Yeah, exactly. Like, and you get all of them. So like, you're just there, like, your party by default has a Pikachu, Venusaur, Blastoise, and a Charizard in at one point. Easy money.
Mm-hmm. And you've got to find two other ones.
Yeah, exactly.
And psychic type and then some of them.
Yeah, whatever you want. I will say, my personal, I think, again, and it's funny you sort of mentioned nostalgia because it's such a powerful thing, right? So one of the things that I have, like, I think Pokemon Ruby for me is like that one with the nostalgia. But I think I'm gonna say objectively, well, probably not objectively, but like Soul Silver for me is probably the best, because like, you know, you get two regions, the remake.
That's true.
You know, your Pokemon followed you. It's so nice. It had the updated moves. Like my favorite and what I think are the best are two different things. And if you listen to the
that's actually just fair, yeah.
If you listen to episode 1, I had the same stance about Final Fantasy. 7 is my favorite because I love it, but objectively I think 9 is probably the best for reasons. Legend of Zelda, okay. Ocarina of Time, absolutely timeless. Let's be honest, it's absolutely amazing. I'm going to say, and I'm going to call myself out, I'm ready for everyone to just evacuate chat when I say this.
Hi.
The Minish Cap is underrated. And it's one of the best Zelda games.
I'll agree with you there. It was very frustrating with some of it, of figuring out where you were supposed to be made little, but it was. It was actually a really good game. I still have it I actually still have a working SP.
I don't know how well you can see it behind me for those watching, but on my shelf I actually have a collection of Nintendo handhelds. And just peeking out, I have a gold Game Boy Advance SP that came with the Minish Cap.
Mine is red. I'm not entirely sure where it is, so I can't, like, bring it out and show it, but...
Like, the Minish Cap, people in chat are agreeing, is really underrated. Like, it's so good. Like, no one talks about it. And, like, don't get me wrong, you know, I played the DS ones, you know, Spirit Tracks and the Phantom Hourglass.
Hourglass, yeah.
And they were good, but not quite as good. But I just feel like it goes under the radar. I think other people make the same argument for Oracle of Seasons and Ages. Like, I haven't played both of those. I've got them on the 3DS Virtual Console. But, like, people say, oh, yeah, just underrated because they just got missed. Because Minish Cap came out when, like, you know, so much other stuff was going on in, like, the Zelda universe and just under the radar. If you also have opinions on this, feel free to let us know. Send us a message. Leave us a comment. But, yeah, okay, so... That's pretty good. I am conscious of time. I don't want to keep you for too long. We've ran over a little bit. Are you ready for our sort of quick fire questions? And full disclosure, I like to give my guests the questions in advance so no one feels overwhelmed or sat or blindsided by any questions. Quick fire. So, I sort of robbed this from Desert Island Discs. One film, one album, one book, one video game. What do you pick?
Kennedy for the movie. Book, maybe little cheaty here, but the Harry Potter series. I don't have like one specific book. It's generally everything I read are in series. So I'm going to go with the Harry Potter series and just deal with that.
That's fine. We'll allow, like, you know, a compilation edition.
Okay, then the seven Harry Potter books and nothing else beyond that. We're just going to talk about those books. Albums. I don't listen to a lot of specific albums. It's just like music in general. So I'm going to go with one of the Guardians of the Galaxy albums because it has like a mishmash of songs that I really, really enjoy. So I'd probably pick one of those. And then game would probably be Ocarina of Time.
Okay.
That's it has to be cool. One of my favorite games of all time.
Now I am. I literally just said I don't want to blindsight you, but I'm now going to chuck in a couple of the ones that I thought of, like since I did the last episode of this.
Oh God.
Like meal, dessert, snack.
Oh, see, now I don't have anything prepared. Okay, snack. Well, munchies. Let's go with that. I love fried cheese. I love fried cheese. It's so not just like mozzarella sticks. Like I can get only at one particular store here because none of the other stores sell it. Fried camembert cheese, and it's oh my god, it's so good. That'd probably be my favorite snack. Dessert, anything chocolate, probably something that I've baked though, because I bake fairly good. Meal, like a dinner meal, if I only could eat like one thing for the rest of my life, it would probably be burgers and chips, because there's so many different things you can do with a burger.
Yeah,
probably that'd probably be my answer. Okay, I might rethink this.
Two other little things. Have you played Majora's Mask? If so, what's your thoughts on it? Someone in chat's asked.
Oh, I have, yes. I did not like it as a child. It was kind of scary, actually, because it came out like a couple of years after Ocarina of Time, so I was like 7, and it was a little bit scary.
Oh, it's utter nightmare for
you. Oh, it's the happy mask salesman, the first time you meet him. Oh my god, that face that he makes.
Nah, I'm
absolutely
all right.
Terrifying. It's terrifying. I like it. As I got older, I was able to appreciate it a bit more, but when I was younger, I absolutely hated that you had to go to a save point to be able to save. You couldn't just like go to the menu and save and leave the game. And the whole 3-day time thing, while I think it's really an interesting game aspect, it causes a lot of anxiety. And if you forget to do something, you have to go and redo all of it. And that's just, ain't nobody got time for that. I want to do it once. And then it's done once. I don't want to have to go back and keep doing it to progress the storyline.
For younger listeners,
so yes, it's a great game.
For younger listeners' benefit, save points are these things that you used to have to go to save your game and put it on your memory card. And a memory card is like a little physical device that you would have your data on. And they'd just be like a few megabytes. You know, I know a lot of people, like games nowadays, they all save automatically and all this. Back in the day, if you didn't, I mean, how many people like forgot to save a game and turned it off? Let's just RIP, gone but not forgotten.
Yeah, there was no auto-save feature. Or, to tell my age here, for the N64, do you remember that little expansion pack thing you had to put into it so you could play games like Donkey Kong 64? Oh, kids these days, you don't know what we went through.
Oh yeah, there's a time, it was a place. The other question I want to ask, so you mentioned that you don't want a dessert that you baked yourself. So you're a bit of a baker?
I am a bit of a baker.
What would you say is your signature bake?
Probably breakfast stuff. I'm really good at muffins. I make cinnamon rolls from scratch with some cream cheese icing. Those are pretty good, but I would probably say my breakfast baked goods would be the ones that I'd be more willing for people to eat.
Okay.
Oh, I make a really good banana cake too with cream cheese frosting. So good.
Okay. Do you make banana bread?
I don't have a loaf pan, so no, I make banana nut muffins sometimes, but I've never made banana bread because I've just never gone out to buy a loaf pan.
Okay. Raisins, yay or nay?
No, God, no. I love scones. I love scones. I hate raisins, so I always have to ask for a plain one, or I just sit there and I just pick out all the raisins before I eat it.
I mean, if I was being pedantic, what about, would you take a sultana?
Probably not. I don't like little... It's the texture, mostly. The little prunes, I don't like the texture.
Okay. I, again, you know, because British things, I have to ask, how do you take your scone? What do you have on it?
Butter and jam.
Nice.
I actually make scones, too. They're quite good.
Nice. I have recently baked scones for the first time. Very enjoyable.
And how were they?
They were, yeah. I mean, they were. I ate them. I mean, you know. I mean, I eat most things, so it's not really a compliment, I guess. But what flavor jam? Jelly for US listeners.
Yes, jelly for you US people. I say as an American, but I've lived in Ireland for 6 years. I have a vitamin D deficiency. I'm officially Irish.
I'm gonna get banned off Twitch.
I love boysenberry jam, but that's not a thing you can get really anywhere except for the Pacific Northwest in the States. So here, raspberry jam is really
okay. Raspberry, sweet. I think that wraps up sort of all my questions. I like to offer the opportunity. Do you have any questions for me?
I did earlier, and now they just like totally went out of my brain. I was going to ask you about your PhD research, but you had actually talked about it a bit, so I don't need to ask about that. I don't know if I'm allowed to ask this, but what age are you? I'm really curious if you're older or younger than me.
I am, let's say, the bad side of 25, but I always like to say I'm under 30, just.
Okay, so you could still be either older or younger than me. 28, so. I was just curious. We're talking about nostalgic games, so where are you on that? Were you actually with me at that age to play it, or does this come later?
Oh, yeah, no, I think so. I think we're in the same bracket. I think we tick the same boxes on forms, you know? We are getting a few questions just about Donkey. What's his favorite Switch game? He's playing Donkey. In a very reclined position behind you there.
Oh, my Eeyore.
Eeyore, yeah, that's the one.
Eeyore. I was like, Donkey, what the hell are you talking about? No, my Eeyore. I don't know. I've never had him with me when I play a game. I would assume. In the Doctor's background? Sorry, now I want to watch Doctor Who. Every time I refer to myself as the Doctor, I'm like, the Doctor?
I'm a couple years away from that, but I've already bought myself a plaque, you know what I'm saying?
I actually literally just framed my diploma a few weeks ago.
Nice.
Had for a year, never put it up. But just find me all back there, all pretty, all my diplomas, super fancy.
That's how we do it. Okay, so I think that about wraps things up. I want to say an absolute huge thank you for sharing this interview with me. I've really enjoyed it. I hope everyone listening has as well. There's a pretty good call to have you back at some point, maybe after you've played To the Moon. And Celeste, and maybe when you've made some
Celeste,
more games.
Yeah, I wrote them. I'm going to go look at them as soon as it's over.
And, you know, maybe when you've made some more games, but it's been an absolute delight. As I say again, thank you so much for hanging out. I have truly been psyched to be with you. We're now going to wrap up. We're going to move over to the ending screen, and we'll just say our last few goodbyes. But thank you, everyone, for watching, hanging out, all the hosts and all
thank
that.
Thank you.
You will be able to find this wherever you found it. And hopefully we'll see you again soon for another episode. But in the meantime, look after yourselves. Look after your mind, body, and soul. And we will see you again very, very soon. Well, thank you so much for listening to another episode of Psyched to Be With You. I really hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. As ever, if you did enjoy it, please leave a review wherever you listen to your podcasts. It really, really helps. If you want to keep up with all things Blind Psyche, check out the episode description for a link, or you can go direct to linktr.ee/blindpsyche. Thank you so much for listening. As ever, look after your mind, body, and soul, and I will see you again very, very soon. Bye-bye.